Okay. We are now going to discuss a couple of papers on impairment.
Rihanna?
For this meeting, we have four agenda papers, of which only two of them contain questions for the board. We will start with agenda paper 5A, which discuss the mandatory effective dates of IFRS 9 as a whole, and then move on to agenda papers 5B and D, and finally we will discuss agenda paper 5C, which considers the due process steps and ask for permission to draft. So I will start with agenda paper 5A, which provides the basis to determine the mandatory effective date of IFRS 9, and it specifically considers the interaction between the accounting for financial assets and the accounting for the insurance contract liabilities under the new insurance standard. The stock analysis in the paper sets out in paragraphs 18 to 37, considers both the temporary accounting mismatches that may arise when an insurance entity applies IFRS 9 while still accounting for its insurance contract liabilities under the current IFRS 4, as well as the subsequent change then in the insurance liabilities when the new insurance contract standard comes in. We have considered various possible approaches to try and address these accounting mismatches if the effective dates of IFRS 9 and the new insurance contract model is not aligned, and these are set out in paragraphs 33 to 37. In summary, we think that the effect of applying the new insurance standards subsequent to applying IFRS 9 can be addressed through transition relief, so that ultimately insurers are not at a disadvantage when they have to apply IFRS 9 first. However, we think that any discussion about these potential transition relief measures would best be dealt with when the insurance proposals are re-deliberated and finalized, because until that time it's impossible to say what relief may or may not be necessary or would be appropriate. So in the light of this, we have identified two alternatives for the mandatory effective date of IFRS 9, and that is either annual periods starting on or after 1 January 2017 or periods starting on 1 January 2018. An effective date of 1 January 2017 would enable the IFRS 9 implementation efforts of preparers that they have currently going to retain its momentum, for them to keep their budgeted funds available, and for the project to receive the necessary attention that it needs to receive. It will also respond to the comments from some constituents, including regulators, that said that IFRS 9 is arguably the ISB's most important response to the financial crisis, and that the implementation of IFRS 9 should not be delayed beyond any period that is strictly necessary, and they would support an effective date of 1 January 2017. However, this date will not address or resolve the issues we have with the accounting mismatches on the insurance side, whereas an effective date of 2018 would address some of those concerns on the insurance side, but it will also respond to the comments from other preparers that have said they need 3 years to implement the standard from the publication of the final version of IFRS 9, because up until that date, any tentative decisions the board may have made is still pending and subject to change, and they would need the final words for that. A date of 2018, although the effective date of the insurance project is still unknown at this stage, an effective date of 2018 will allow the ISB more time to consider the insurance proposals, and it will minimize any period between for insurers between adopting IFRS 9 and then subsequently the insurance standard. The disadvantage of this approach, however, is that it will delay the benefits of improvement in financial reporting resulting from IFRS 9 to be delayed for all entities because of the insurance linkage. We've also considered an alternative effective date beyond 2018, but we regarded that as inappropriate to delay the implementation of IFRS 9 beyond 2018, so we've rejected that. The staff is not making a recommendation in this regard. We don't think one of these alternatives is necessarily better than the other one. There are pros and cons to each of them, and there's a trade-off between the timely implementation of IFRS 9 versus trying to resolve the insurance mismatches. So with that, we will ask which alternative for the effective dates for IFRS 9 do you prefer?
Okay, Gary?
If we were looking towards 2018 is the answer. You said the insurance industry, which I understand, and being tied to the insurance project, and you can handle that in perhaps in transition relief if we pick 2017. But putting the transition relief issue aside for 2018, you know, the insurance industry and other people saying we need at least 3 years after the final words are published, which is a heavier weighting in your mind?
I think that's the million-dollar question.
No, but I mean, is insurance more important? I mean, 3.5 years, for non-insurance strikes me as an awful long time. You know, from here, recognizing most decisions have been on the shelf for some period of time, assuming no consequential changes today. I mean, most of the things you have to do have been known for a period of time. So again, it still strikes me as that's almost 4 years out if you went to 2018.
I don't think we can say the one is more important than the other. Okay. I think you need to look at it from a banking perspective. You would say impairment is more important, so get it early. From an insurance perspective, you would say that is more important. So I don't think we can.
How would you envision transition relief working for insurance? I mean, if you're maturely subject insurance contract standard, you wouldn't have to apply IFRS 9? Or how, do you have a vision of how that might work?
The transition relief that we've discussed in the paper is more about the effect of changing the measurements, the classification measurement of the assets. So even in the insurance exposure draft, the 2013 exposure draft, there were certain transition provisions included in there where you could revoke the previous designation of, let's say, equity investments that you've classified as fair value through OCI, or you could reassess your fair value options that you've made previously. So if, and I think Andrea can help us out here, but I think if you were to confirm those transition provisions you had in the insurance EV, that would resolve a lot of the accounting mismatches that might arise.
Yeah, the general idea of the transition relief we had proposed in the insurance CD was that to the extent you had the ability to make collections in IFRS 9 when you first applied IFRS 9, insurers would have the same ability to make collections when they applied IFRS 4. So if you had made one election, assuming one mismatch scenario, you'd be able to undo that. What it doesn't do is allow everything in IFRS 9 to be treated in exactly the same way because of the way that that IFRS 9 is structured. And I think it's important also to bear in mind that we're going to be talking about things like whether or not there should be options within the insurance contract standards, and to the extent you have those options and how revocable or not, and that's also going to affect this landscape.
Yeah, because I'm thinking if you went to 2018, which, and you can tell by the tone of questions, I'm thinking 2017 is the better answer, but if you're only filing annual accounts with annual disclosures, it would be early in 2019 before the first of your annual disclosures would sort of be on the street, would they not? I mean, full year 2018, publish early 2019. That's 5 years in some cases of instance information not making it into the public domain. It just seems to me is way too long.
But most companies filing quarterly.
Yeah. Maru.
Thanks, Hess. I think staff's paper is very good in drawing our attention to this antagonism between insurance or earlier implementation date. At inception, I think 2017 is the logical alternative, considering the what we are coming from. So 2008 was the heat of the crisis. We are talking about, after almost 10 years, a new complete IFRS 9. But I think the antagonism that we should discuss is not really only 2017 versus 2018 because of the insurance company perspective, insurance contracts standard effective date perspective. This is not a trivial implementation process. We all know, we learned during all these years how many difficult challenges in operational terms, and particularly with one industry, that's the banking industry. And also it affects all industries. It's not only an industry specific. So I guess this is much more complex that we could envisage, because although they do know what we are leaning to, they do know what we have been discussing, they don't know the final answer yet. And of course, resources will be allocated to the project to implement IFRS 9 in completeness only after we have issued the final standard. Another thing that it's not on the paper, but it's important for us when we discuss this, is the endorsement process around the world. Of course, we cannot anticipate how endorsement will go with this, but experience shows, at least to me, that it can take some time for particular jurisdictions or areas for the endorsement process to be completed. And if we do not provide enough time, my concern is that the endorsement can take a while, let's say until at least the end of this year, and then the legal we can face or end up with legal extensions of implementation date that will drive anyway to, I would just use 2018 as the potential, 2018, and then we'll have diversity in implementation date as well. So although 2017 seems to be the more logical, appropriate, I think we should take into consideration the endorsement all over the globe, and maybe 2018 could provide enough lead time for a smooth implementation, and for particular jurisdictions that at the end of the day decided to adopt early, they would do so if they do believe this is truly an enhancement in total. I'm sure many will be willing to do so, in particular because of the hedge portion of IFRS 9. I don't know with regards to others, but in particular because of the hedge, so at the jurisdictional level, I think they will have some pressure to adopt early this. But anyway, in a broader picture, I think I would work with 2018, consider that we will be publishing this until July this year, and then we'll start the endorsement process in many regions.
Pat?
I'd like to propose an alternative that the staff rejected. It's kind of, I guess, somewhere between A and B. But it specifically addresses the issue for the insurance industry. It's my experience, having looked at insurance companies in places like Japan, the US, UK, that an entity doesn't write a lot of insurance contracts unless it's actually regulated and licensed as an insurance company. So circumscribing the businesses or enterprise that would be most affected by this as an insurance company, I think is relatively easy to do. Now, Kumar shakes his head no, but I challenge you to contradict what I'm saying and prove it. But the reality is, I think that you could, within a bank insurance company or a insurance holding company, identify the legal entities that are operating as insurance enterprises and allow them to adopt IFRS 9 when IFRS 4 comes online. The bank part of that entity, if you're a bank insurance company, would obviously go forward and adopt it in 2017. So I think there's a way to do it, and I don't think it would create many problems. I think at a minimum we should ask the bank insurers whether or not that is operational. But based on my experience, I think it should be.
just maybe then ask, in that situation, if we were to do that, so let's say we say the legal entities that is registered or are registered as insurers within a larger, let's say, banking group, they don't have to do IFRS 9. They will continue doing IAS 39 for their assets. So in your consolidated accounts of this banking group, would you have both IFRS 9 classifications and IAS 39 classifications?
That's correct.
And you've got bifurcation on the asset side for the insurers, but you don't have bifurcation.
That is correct. And the reason why I don't have a problem with that is because today most of the assets that reside inside a bank are loans, and they're accounted for at amortized cost. And I'd say, you know, the lion's share of the assets that sit on the balance sheet of an insurance company are fixed income securities. They're accounted for at available for sale. So they're different measurement attributes today. Now, what would be driving the different measurement attributes after this, you know, document is finalized is are different scopes, but the actual reporting outcomes would be substantially the same. So you might have different reasons for why they're reported differently, but that's only temporary until IFRS 4 is finished. And this is not a long-term issue or a long-term problem. So I think it actually solves our problem and gives the insurance industry enough leeway and scope to deal with the issue. The banks can move forward with it. And if you're a bank insurance company, you can actually go forward with the implementation, learn from the process, and then when you have to do it for the insurance industry, it becomes a lot easier. But you don't want to put these companies to a revolving door.
May I ask the possible net increases in accounting mismatches because of IFRS 9? They cannot be all that big, can they? Given that classification and measurement does not give wildly different results.
I can respond to that. I think there could be differences. I think there can be mismatches, for example, because of the removal of bifurcation.
Yes, I understand
And insurance companies hold structured bonds. There could also be mismatches because of business model, where things have to be accounted for in a particular way. That's going to be less of a concern ultimately when we get to the new IFRS 4, because it's got a current measurement model, so making use of the fair value option will be able to deal with a lot of those mismatches. But until everybody moves to that type of insurance model, they could have this period where there is mismatch. So I don't think it's certainly all of their assets, but I think that it could cause noise. So I think it is for me, just while I've got the microphone, if it wasn't for the insurance problem, I would go for 2017. But the insurance,
right.
It does make me pause.
Daryl?
I also perhaps pick up on a bit of a response to Pat, but let me first maybe work through my thinking in terms of data before that goes into this. I think the first thing for me is, and it was Omar's point, that this is IFRS 9 is a standard that will apply to a lot more than insurance. And in generally speaking, we wouldn't necessarily take the development of one standard into account in determining the date of another one. So when I started thinking about this, I thought about the IFRS 9 issue in isolation. And for me, and again picking up on some of the arguments we've heard before, people have had IFRS 9 around for a long time. We asked them on what they thought the lead time was that they needed. We heard from most companies that it was in that period of 2 to 3 years. But subsequent to that, we've actually simplified the model a little bit. We've put in simplifications to make it easier to adopt. We're also releasing, or we finished our final decisions, and I think a lot of people have followed us fairly closely. So looking at IFRS 9 in isolation, I would be very supportive of a 2017 date. I think that's responsive both to what we've heard from constituents and preparers, and I think it's particularly responsive to what we've heard from users and what we've heard from the regulators. Like Sue, I've got a little bit of sympathy for the insurers. I believe that we do create a little bit of a problem with them with the timing. On the face of it, looking at it, we're looking at a one-year difference, the difference between 2017 and 2018. And I think if I were to feel strongly that 2018 was a guaranteed date, that was the date that we would have insurance completed by, I would certainly be open to considering moving IFRS 9 out by that 1 year. But I don't think we can say that. We haven't started the deliberations yet on the IFRS 4 Phase 2. We don't know what may come out of that deliberations process. We will have to consider at some point, at least the insurers view that they might need longer than 3 years to do this. And to my mind, that means that 2018 is not by any manner of means cast in stone. So if we try to link the two dates, we're going to do it in one of two ways. We've either got to say that IFRS 9 will become effective when the insurance standard is effective, which is crazy. That's a sort of a blank checkbook. Or we say we have to deliver insurance by 2018. And I don't think the insurers are going to feel that they are well done by approach that says we've got a fixed date. So it seems to me setting the IFRS 9 date in isolation makes a lot of sense. And I think, Rihanna, you touched on the point when you said we then need to consider within the context of the insurance discussions any additional relief we would particularly provide for insurers. Pat then suggested the idea of actually providing that relief right now in the context of saying all insurance entities are scoped out. Now, I think there are a number of concerns with that, and I think we started to touch on that. I don't know exactly what a regulated insurance entity is. I don't know, for example, whether I consider companies like Samsung and Sony regulated insurers. If not, I don't know how I would deal with the fact that they've got the two different accounting bases. In some jurisdictions, banks and insurers are regulated by one regulator. So do we consider that a regulated insurance company or regulated bank or just regulated? How does that play into it? So I've got a lot of concerns with that. Even so, I might have been comfortable with it if I felt it was just 1 year. I might have been comfortable saying, let's provide relief to insurance entities, regulated insurance entities, for 1 year. But we don't know if it's going to be 1 year. And so my concern at the moment would be, I would rather say, and I think we need to be very clear in the message, that we are aware of this problem. We are aware that this creates issue. We do, certainly from my perspective, and I think Sue expressed the point, have some sympathy with the concerns that are raised here. But until we have a clearer idea of what's going to happen with the insurance standard, I don't believe we can start setting that relief or setting that criteria yet.
In sum, you would opt for 2017?
I would opt for 2017 on 2019. I don't think we need to make the undertaking, but I think just talking about it has made the undertaking that we will consider the insurance issue as we go along and once we've got a clearer view of where insurance is going to come out.
Hans, if I could just identify or just one point that Daryl made, and that is you take the example of Samsung, and I don't know this for sure, but I presume that the entity that makes the device sitting in front of Top is not writing insurance contracts. So within a corporate entity, a family, a group, the entities that are writing insurance contracts are discrete legal entities, and that can be identified. And so you say you don't know what a regulated entity is. I think the companies can point to and identify, typically within an enterprise, which ones are writing the insurance contracts and which ones are building iPads or which ones are selling, you know, certificates of deposit. I don't think that's a challenge.
In a jurisdiction which I'm intimately familiar, it's common to offer credit life policies with mortgages and other types of
things. Within the same legal entity?
The same entity, all part of the same process.
Well, then, in that situation, I would say they would have to be stuck with the 2017 or 2018 date.
I think that's my concern, and I don't necessarily disagree with trying to give relief. My concern is the consequences and potentially unintended consequences of us trying to draw that line at a point in time when we want to try and get IFRS 9 out. And I think it's just that concern that worries me.
Kumar? That is the primary concern which I had, is how do I define? And because I have seen jurisdictions coming out of Asia where the definition of who's being regulated, because it's the same regulator that is regulating both insurance and banks.
But it's not the regulator, it's the legal entity that you're focusing on.
And they not necessarily have to always be different. That's a problem. And that is where the same thing as Daryl was saying. That's why I am concerned, is that trying to define that, we might try to scope things in that we weren't planning to. That's the concern, honestly.
Philippe?
Well, I think Daryl has very well said what I wanted to say about the constraints on the dates. I don't want to face two risks. One, being forced to put undue pressure on the effective date of IFRS 4. The completion of which is yet unknown. We don't know how much time we need to complete. And then to have a too short implementation phase because of the IFRS 9 being effective at a given date. The other risk I don't want to face is the risk of having to postpone again IFRS 9 because we are late on insurance.
Yes.
So I think we have a date. We are completed on IFRS 9. My understanding is that the banks, at least the one I'm familiar with, are ready to implement by 1/1/17. They say it is feasible, that's fine. I think that also if we postpone the effective date, I think we're opening a very long endorsement period, and too long is too long. And there is a big risk that it will become a good opportunity for people to come back with good ideas on how to implement new ideas or to improve. So I think we have something we think.
Yeah, or the board might get new ideas.
Yeah, even a new board. By this, we'll have new board. So I think we have something we are comfortable with. I think 2 years and a half for endorsement is sufficient, I think. If we give too much time, people will just sit on it and don't move. So I think we have to have an impetus. We have to give movement. And by putting a date which is not too far away, really we put some pressure on the endorsement mechanism to start at some point, not postpone the beginning of it. So all in all, I would go for 1/1/17.
Martin.
Yeah. And I think really, man, this insurance issue, I think it is a very serious issue because, man, if people are saying we don't know when insurance will be effective, or but let's assume it is 2018, and then we have 1 year that they have to apply IFRS 9 with different accounting on the liability side, and then they have to change, and then staff proposed, okay, that we give transition relief then in 2018, but I don't have any clue how we should do that, because if we currently cannot define what an insurance company is, because if we could do that, I would be with Pat, but I think we cannot do that. But how would central transition relief would be done? Because for a company who has banking business and insurance business, there is not, people can say this asset is for insurance and this asset is for the banking business. That is not the case. And if we would allow them, for example, if they have mismatches that can do the classification again, then if they introduce then the insurance standard, you must come up with kind, do you allow that for which company and for whom not? And then I think we have the same problem as we have discussed today. It is not possible to identify, okay, what is really then affected by insurance contract, IFRS new standard, and we have the same problem. So I don't see how we will do that. Everybody's saying we will do that, but I don't see how. And therefore, I think really maybe why don't, because my expectation today was at least we should aim for the insurance standard to be then maybe 2018 effective, because that is also a standard which we have debated for long, and I think people are waiting for that. And therefore, why don't we saying, okay, it is 2018, because at least then, okay, we have a chance that insurance companies can do that in parallel and give choice for early application. And if regulators in the world think that their banks, and banks I think are defined, should use really our IFRS 9 standard earlier, then they could determine that.
Yeah, but can I go back? I've been considering that element of early application and relying on the regulators to enforce an earlier application than 1/1/18. Usually they don't do that. They may like banks to start applying IFRS 9 from next year, maybe 1/1/15, but they have no power to do it. So it's a bit for us unrealistic to say we rely on them, we leave it to them. I also want to comment on Pat's proposal to delay for the legal entity. The problem is that it's not that clear-cut that banks only have loans and insurance companies only have bonds in their portfolios or equities. Actually, I've seen many banks having sovereign bonds in their portfolios as liquidity reserve, heavy amount. So would you apply IFRS 9 to the classification and measurement of those portfolios for the banks at the same time as IAS 39? AFS for the insurance companies, consolidate all that in one set of financial statements? I think the users will be quite confused unless you present two balance sheets by segment, full financial statements by segment, which we don't ask for.
If you have the scenario that Daryl described and you're describing, where, which is within one legal entity, you have the enterprises offering both insurance contracts.
Let's assume you have two legal entities, one bank, one insurance, the same holding company. The bank holding company has a bank branch, right. Bank legal entity, and insurance legal entity. So, and the banks will have loans, of course, but also a big portfolio of sovereign bonds, liquidity reserve. And the insurance company will have probably not many loans, but a lot of bonds, a lot of equities. And you consolidate all that, one under IAS 39, including equities, which are actually P&L, and one under IFRS 9, and the one OCI, and some recycled, some don't. Come on.
But with all the options we've improved in IFRS 9, it's not different.
Comment on Martin's analysis on transition.
I think the way we, when we talked about the transition relief, would be for the assets that are backing those insurance liabilities, because you can only have an accounting mismatch or avoid the accounting mismatch if you can identify the asset that backs the liability. So I don't think they, so by allowing additional transition relief for insurers to, let's say, redesignate assets to under the fair value option, or even the equities under the fair value OCI presentation option, I don't think it will create a problem with the banking assets, because those assets are not linked to this accounting mismatch that arise when implementing the insurance standard.
But we just have learned from Philips that it is not possible to really say which asset is backing which kind of liability.
Well, the exposure draft, the proposed transition relief on this point was the same as it is in the second phase of IFRS 9. We said if new mismatches are created or old mismatches go away as a result of the changes introduced by the standard, then you get a fresh look at the fair value option. So it would work in that same way. If new mismatches arose or went away because of the change in the insurance contracts accounting, they'd get a fresh look. And that was already in the exposure draft on insurance.
Mary?
Timing, let me hold off on the insurance aspect. Well, no, actually, I'll start with that. On the insurance aspect, I am very concerned about the idea of a single reporting entity, not legal entity, but reporting entity, having partial, not full adoption of a standard. And I would not be supportive of pursuing partial relief within a reporting entity. Both from an understandability of financial statements and thinking about some of our back to basics in IS1, consistent accounting policies, within a group, I would want all or nothing for a reporting entity, even if you can identify separate legal entities. I would, however, share some of Pat Finnegan's encouragement to look again at 15A about whether or not we could think, especially as we have better visibility about insurance, about providing an opportunity for delay in adopting IFRS 9 if you will have a significant impact from adopting insurance. I think there would be some room for gaming, but you'd have to really want to delay IFRS 9, and if you are, let me focus on banks for a minute, a financial institution that wanted to get a, let's say, 1 or 2 year buy on applying IFRS 9, and to do that, you made an argument that there would be a significant impact, not just that you would have to adopt the standard, and that's more the way I think I would look at 15A. I think you'd also have to convince your prudential regulator that this was significant enough that you should stand out in your, in your peer group as not having adopted that. So I think we should look, not dismiss 15A now before we have better understanding from the insurance project perspective about timing and the extent of mismatches, but I would only think about that for the entire reporting entity, even if that's a bank assurance group.
And Mary, you would only want to think about that once we've got a better idea of the timeline, or
yes.
Do you think we should be doing that now?
Well, I don't know how productive it would be to do now, but I agree with the comments that have been made about let's decide once and for all what the effective date of IFRS 9 is and not find ourselves in a year debating whether or not we're going to have another delay. I think if we do look at something in a year because we've become convinced that it's such a big issue for insurance, we should be looking only for those entities for which adopting the insurance standard would be have a significant effect. That's how I would try and ring fence it. But another comment that I wanted to make is that there's a comment in paragraph 5 that, assuming that IFRS 9 is issued by the end of June 2014, I am hesitant to make that assumption. I think we should try and finalize IFRS 9 as soon as possible, but the words are really going to matter, in getting the standard out, particularly because there are a lot of places where we are expecting judgment to be applied, and we want judgment to be applied consistently, comparably, at least, across entities. That means our objectives are going to have to be very clearly articulated, and we're going to have to balance well the amount of guidance that we reach. And I want for the staff to have the confidence that if there's something that comes up as a sweep issue, it can be brought back to the board. And frankly, if we want to issue at the end of June, we'd have to have all that done by mid-May. And I think that is just too soon for a state. You know, I don't want to put all my hopes on that assumption. So I think realistically, we're probably looking more at an early Q3 than Q2 for issue, you know, for pushing the final document out the door. And so in that, that's the context in which I would look at 2017 versus 2018. I think the last two points I'd make are, I think it's going to be a standard for which an entity has to think very hard about how it phases in the disclosures about standards that have been published but not yet adopted. And that's one where we might want to particularly emphasize in any discussions with both the prudential and the market regulatory community about, once we get this published, what the steps are for somebody adopting it and what its expected impact is going to be, because that will be very important information for the markets to have. Last question. I can't remember why we are focused only on one January 2017 or one January 2018 as opposed to one July 2017.
Because as a policy, we try and use the 1st of January so we don't get too much variation intra-year. So that was a decision made by the board for big projects.
Okay. I had a feeling there was something missing in there, which is why, you know, given how far into 2014, I think we realistically will be for finalizing it. I think it's very finely balanced. I think there's probably a very slightly more that weighs on going to 2017 than 2018, but I'd be more comfortable with that if I thought we had one more tool in our toolkit for insurance if we conclude that there's a big problem about a gap between the effective date of IFRS 9 and the insurance standard.
Patricia.
Well, I'm very concerned about the gap between the effective date of IFRS 9 and the potential effective date for insurance, because I'm mindful of complaints from the user community about the disruption to their analysis and valuation by consecutive changes in a company's accounting. So to have an insurance company change to IFRS 9 one year, potentially creating confusion with accounting mismatches, have that accounting for a year or two, or we don't know how long, and then switch again to the new insurance accounting method, I just see potential disruption in that market for users. And so I was going to make a suggestion along the lines of Mary's, but I wouldn't wait until we had more visibility on IFRS 9. I would want to give the preparers and the investment community some certainty now. And so something along the lines of what Mary suggested.
I didn't fully understand it and how it differed from Pat's suggestion.
Pat would have the two standards cohabit at the same time, and Marie said, no, you postpone for all the entity, for all business in the entity, because you are predominantly insured. You are predominantly an insurer, or something like that.
For all entities that have an insurance activity.
Predominant.
Significant.
Okay, so a bank assureur would also for the bank postpone.
If the bank is relatively small in comparison to the insurance business, if the insurance business is marginal to the banking business, maybe not.
And then we're going to have to work out what significant effect means. So let's say you're already in a fair value insurance market. Do you have a significant effect of our new insurance model? And how are you going to, we won't be able to tell that until we know what the insurance model is.
I agree. It's not an easy thing, and it would leave judgment and I think a lot more maybe pressure on prudential regulators, you know, in particular, who are some of the people saying they want this soon. But I just, my kind of line is a single reporting entity, even if that reporting entity is a bank assurance, you know, both bank insurance, has got to either apply it or not apply it, not apply it for some and not, but not the other bits of the business, even if they are operationally distinct.
Tuck?
Same lines.
Okay. Jan?
Well, I think there are a lot of arguments in favor of 18, but I don't like it. Summer 2007, I realized we had a crisis coming. And we have spent, if we go for 17, 10 years to come up with a solution. So I think for that reason alone, I think we should say, this must come out. This must be effective. And I think we are actually doing a change which is important. This with having a tweak for insurance industry is not in my favor. It's a very good incentive for anyone to buy a small insurance company and say that now I'm also in insurance. So I think we must have one solution, we must bring it to the market efficiently and say we have dragged our feet behind us to come with a solution, but here it is, implement it. I realize, like Amaro says, 2018, endorsement and all of these things, but I think we must push this out.
Stephen?
Oh, yeah, Ian, sorry.
Okay, sorry. I mean, I think I'm more down Martin's line, quite frankly. I don't like this fiddling around with transition things for the insurance. And I'm also quite alarmed to hear that we're contemplating quite seriously we won't finish insurance or have it ready for implementation by 1st of January 2018, which is 5 years nearly from now. And if, you know, Andrew has been talking generally about, well, it might take till the end of 2015 to finish the insurance. I think that's too long. I mean, how long are we going to keep going with this project? How many more things do we have to consider? And so I just think we should target 2018. I know that's, I can take Jan and other people's arguments, it's too far out. No, and try to work to the possibility of no transitions for the insurance. We get the whole lot done at the same time. And I think this continual talk of putting out and out and out the date for the insurance standard is really dangerous, and I'm worried by it.
Could I just clarify something, Ian, what you said? I think when we talk about 2018 for insurance, we're talking about the mandatory effective date rather than the date it's completed. So that.
Well, I was going to the end of next year to complete it, which then gives 3 years transition.
Okay, but you were just saying not completing insurance until 2018. You
no, not having it ready for implementation.
Okay. So I think it's the mandatory effective date.
Yeah.
That's on, okay.
That's what I said.
Okay.
The problem is, you know, I think your maths is wrong on this. If you're talking about end of 2015, that's 2 years of transition.
Yes, plus one comparative year, which it means to be
okay.
Year before. Comparatives also will have to be restated.
I was trying to write it down.
So I think that is where the concern comes from, is that it simply puts a very, to my mind, it puts a very tight deadline, and there's nothing wrong with deadlines, but the deadline is being driven by something other than the insurance considerations, yeah. And that just does concern me.
Yeah. I guess, I mean, my difference of opinion would be there that I think we should get it done anyway.
I think we should definitely.
Can I make a point? I think we have not decided whether we give relief for the comparatives on insurance. We have to decide whether the transition will be retrospective, modified, whether it will be 1 year comparatives, and whether that means that the preparation for insurance companies will have to be completed not by 1/1/18 but 1/1/17. So I think we still have a number of open questions in terms of the real impact in terms of transition. And at this point, I don't know whether we can rely on 3 years as being sufficient, Stephen?
Provide some clarification, because I think the comparatives is a slight red herring. What we committed to in the insurance ED was that we would allow approximately 3 years between finalising the insurance standard, which means publishing it, and the mandatory effective date. So that was the commitment. So the comparatives would be within that period already.
Stephen?
I don't think we should underestimate the challenges we have with insurance. It would be great to finish it, but it's a highly complex project and there are some difficult issues for us to discuss in the redeliberations, and it's also going to be extremely complex for insurance entities to implement, and we've already said 3 years. it would be great to get to a point where the effective date was 2018. That may or may not happen. Having said that, though, I do agree with Pat about the confusion to users of financial statements about having different effective dates for insurance and financial instruments. If we can do stuff to avoid that, then we certainly should do it. Even if the effective date for insurance was, let's say, 2019, we are at least giving the opportunity, a realistic opportunity for early application of insurance. So if we had 2018, which is my favorite date for financial instruments, then at least we have that opportunity of having things changing at the same time. I don't like the idea of bringing in an indefinite deferral of IFRS 9. So I think any of the scoping out of insurance, whether it's at the reporting entity level, whether it's at the subsidiary level, what's regulated, I think we have that. There's a danger that we end up just with IAS 39 continuing indefinitely. Now, I certainly hope that we will get insurance done on a timely basis, but we can't be sure what the outcome is going to be. So I wouldn't want that indefinite deferral. It would be nice to have 2017 as an effective date. I'm thinking about banking and the impairment side of it. Having said that, the industry, the banking industry, has asked for 3 years. I know some have said now, well, let's have two, and they've sort of we've got mixed messages out of it. On balance, I'm going to go for 2018 because I think that there will need to be a significant time period for implementation for IFRS 9, particularly by the banks. And I think it gives us a greater chance of providing that alignment with insurance. It may not be perfect, but at least it gives us that chance of allowing the same effective date for insurance and FI.
Steve, if we are not able to successfully finalize insurance as you predicted, what we should?
Then we don't change the effective date for IFRS 9. The fallback we have is obviously the transition provision. So I fully support all the efforts that will be made to ease the transition if we have a different effective date. And I think that would be acceptable and would work. But just thinking of it from a user perspective and minimizing the disruption, that's what pushes me to 2018, because I think it gives us a good chance of pushing ahead with insurance. I'm optimistic that we can make good, timely progress, get that thing done, and then the best outcome is to give the insurers the opportunity of adopting the whole thing in 2018.
Shall we see who can
support 2017?
No, let's start with 20, with Stephen's proposal, 2018.
Eleven in favor?
But that's it. Can we include that in the conclusion? All right.
The next two agenda papers are for information purposes only, and they don't include any questions. Paper 5B provides an update on the FASB's recent decisions to proceed with refining the current expected credit loss model, the CECL model. And according to the current technical plan, they are still planning to publish that standard also by the end of June this year. The rest of the paper just focuses on the most significant concerns we've heard through our comment letter process and how the tentative decisions we've reached to date addresses those concerns raised. Agenda paper 5D then go on to provide an overview summary of what the tentative impairment model is after incorporating all of these tentative decisions. And it's just a high-level summary, so it doesn't include all the detailed guidance that will go along with it. But it just summarizes the main aspects of our model. If there are any questions or comments on this paper, we can deal with them, but otherwise, we can go on to the next paper.
Thank you.
Kenny?
Kenny?
Yep. The next paper we'll discuss is Agenda Paper 5C, which presents the due process summary for the impairment project and considers whether the board can proceed to the balloting process for the new Chapter 5 of IFRS 9. Within the agenda paper, we lay out the history of the project and a summary of how it has developed, along with an analysis of the due process steps and an explanation of how we've fulfilled each. We also consider whether re-exposure is necessary and discuss balloting in sense. Paragraph 31 through 59 of the paper lay out the IASB's compliance with the mandatory, non-mandatory, and other optional steps as required by the IFRS Foundation's due process handbook. Impairment has had an extensive process of outreach and re-exposure since it was identified as an area of interest in 2008. During the exposure of each of the three public consultation documents on impairment, the ISB has engaged in outreach activities with a variety of constituents and across a variety of jurisdictions. We consider that the ISB has obtained a thorough understanding of the issues. Additionally, during the 2013 ED comment period, the ISB undertook detailed field work to test how the proposed model would work in practice. Hence, the staff think that the ISB has met the due process requirements. Paragraph 61 of the agenda paper lays out the re-exposure criteria that the ISB should consider, and the staff think that the modifications to the proposals in the 2013 ED resulting from re-deliberations are not fundamental, but rather largely confirm and clarify what was originally proposed. Consequently, we don't think that re-exposure will open any new issues. So, except for sweep issues that may arise during drafting, the ISB has completed re-deliberations on all major technical issues, and most of the issues discussed were tentatively agreed upon by the majority of the ISB. Hence, the staff recommend that the ISB does not re-expose impairment for public comment, and we are of the opinion that we're ready to proceed to balloting. So we have four questions to ask you on this paper, and we'll take them one by one. And the first of all is that of due process. My question to you is, does the ISB agree with the staff conclusion that due process requirements have been met?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Is that unanimous?
Unanimous?
Yes. Above and beyond.
The second question is about re-exposure. Does the ISB does the ISB agree with the staff recommendation not to re-expose impairment for public comment?
Yes.
Yes.
Unanimous.
Thirdly, is the ISB satisfied that it has undertaken sufficient consultation and analysis to be able to begin the balloting process for the impairment chapter of IFRS 9?
Yes.
Yes.
Just about.
Voting against on this.
Yes.
Okay. And finally, do any members intend to dissent from the proposals?
No dissenters.
No dissenters. Oh. No. Fantastic. Okay.
That's what you get when you have such a conceptually beautiful proposal.
Okay.
That's it?
Yeah, this concludes the